I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room.
Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminished and the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed in the rent room. We let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Red Room.
Don't be looking at me like that, Jeffrey. What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest, and you guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room, where we keep it street, we keep it opinionated, we keep it what, everybody?
2015.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jump right on that. You've heard it now.
Yeah, so you in.
Damn, Skippy.
Exactly. So on this show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture, but our focus is always screenwriting, stories, craft, and shit like that. So do me a favor. What? Why you gotta? Hold on. Wait a minute. Let me put some boom in it. So Lisa is over here eating her little dried apricots.
Don't be counting my business.
Okay. Got the little crunching munches making all kind of noises.
Let's be specific here. It's unsulfured.
What does
dried
that mean,
apricots? That means there's no sulfur in it. It's more natural. It tastes better. It's like eating candy, sweet candy. Look, at least it's not Doritos. I'm trying to. You see how discreet I was? You got the Doritos in front of me.
I know it. He put them all in front of me.
I brought them out just for your funky ass, too.
Continue.
You really want to get to bring out the Twizzlers, though, whatever it is.
Exactly. Oh my God,
I'm a Red Vines dude.
I love Twizzlers. I hate Red Vines.
Do you?
They're both the devil.
I'm so not talking to you anymore.
They are Satan made.
So y'all see how we do it on the rant when we just silly as hell. So we got my girl Lisa Bolakaja. Mm-hmm. We call her the street nerdist in the house.
Well, you know, it's really important to know that even though I do a lot of this nerdy fandom, pop culture, sci-fi writing, movie writing stuff, at the same time, I can bring it to people academic. In fact, this past weekend, I was at UC Riverside for an alternative futurisms conference. So some brilliant minds from all over the United States talking about sci-fi, but a global perspective. So I was learning about Gulf futurism, you know.
Gulf?
The Gulf. You know,
the Gulf.
Yeah, like Saudi Arabia.
I was like, what you learn about Gulf over there for, bitch? What you doing?
The audience knows what I'm talking about. So, but no, they were, you know, it was just really brilliant, you know, for my own people, like the Native Americans, Latino, just everybody, just Asian. It's just a bunch of, like, academic texts, like really smart people saying really smart things, which is basically the shit that we talk about here. Okay. They just put like $20 words on them.
So, shit I don't listen to. What's up, Kev Killebrew?
What's up? Hello, audience.
Oh, good Lord. Stop it.
Welcome, my children. No,
we got Kevin in the house again. And then we got our special guest who came in to hang out with us again today because you guys know we're coming up on Halloween. So we're going to be airing this around Halloween that time. My man, my big bro. Jeffrey Reddick, y'all. What's up, y'all?
Yay. Hey, everybody.
Back again.
Back and let again. Me just say, before we start, I had to tell Jeffrey that I was trying not to geek out.
Yeah,
I was gushing. I was trying not to geek out because I just love Final Destination. It was brilliant. The concept is brilliant. I mean, what can you say?
He wanted a smart brothers and shit.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
What can I say?
I'm brilliant. I mean, I know what else to say.
But you know what's funny? We brought up on the episode, go listen to the episode we did with Jeffrey. He's played some game in there. We brought up on the episode with you, which is really interesting, that you and Kevin, I never can say his last name, from Underworld.
Grievous.
Grievous,
that too.
Kevin.
Mm-hmm. Are some of the only two brothers that we could think of who have their own franchise in horror in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Have you come up with anybody else yet?
No.
See?
No, because I like to tell you guys.
Unless they hide and they got that one drop and they just try to hide and they're passing. I'm not going to mention your names, Tony Pereira. I see you. Who was brilliant, did Eraser and all that stuff too. But, you know, there might be some of us in there we're just not aware of because they don't,
until it's mine.
Right.
Good point.
No, I liked when you said that. I was one of only two, so I decided I wasn't going to investigate it.
He's trying to be all exclusive.
I kind of like that.
The Google link has been shut down.
I have not been able to get on Google.
No, but real talk. That's real talk right there. You know, especially franchises that were huge and got sequels. A lot of times we can get like one movie, but for it to keep, you know.
And they keep making them.
Yeah. And also coming with a unique perspective, taking ideas and making them new. For you, you know, people avoiding death and death as an entity coming after people like, bitch, no, you're supposed to die. Mm-hmm. And I'm coming for you. And the same with Underworld, where you've got like vampires versus werewolves.
It's Romeo and Juliet.
With vampires and werewolves. Yeah. You know, taking something that's, you know, might be a little old, something new, and just kind of put it out there and make it exciting.
And speaking of that, Kev, we've been trying to get your ass on the show, just so you know.
Kevin's too big now. He's too. I be seeing. Look, Kevin.
Okay, I've emailed
Kevin,
his ass.
Wait. Kevin be on Facebook putting up pictures when he cooked. Like, I saw that barbecue chicken, Kevin. When you was like bragging about what you was cooking and everything. But, you know, he's a busy man.
He's very busy.
He ain't doing nothing.
Because they were trying to launch iFrankenstein as a franchise.
Yeah.
So, did you hear about that, Jeffrey?
iFrankenstein. Yeah, I saw iFrankenstein. Mm-hmm. They're gonna try to make a franchise.
Yeah. They're trying.
Okay.
They try.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think what's happening is a lot of people, and it has nothing to do with Kevin.
No.
It's just the idea. A lot of times things get big and popular, and we do it so much that. You know, the audience gets tired. They want something new and different. And I think maybe at that point when iFrankenstein, which was a great concept, I just think at that time we were already kind of tired of stuff.
Well, I think, you know, when he threw his twist on it because there were angels or people that were...
Yeah, it might have been a little bit much.
Angels. Yeah, it was a lot going on in there. So, you know, and then you had, what was the one, Priest? That came out in the Legion. You had all those.
I love
those. Although I love those shows with angels and devils. I love it when they take stuff that's not really in the Bible. Like, they're like the esoteric texts.
It's like, what if?
And like, and it's like, they have like soap operas with like angels and stuff. And I'm sitting here, you know, the old Christian, by like, I don't remember that being in the Bible, but I guess I guess that could happen. But I love that kind of stuff.
It was in a New Testament.
Yeah. What was like that one?
It
was
the books that didn't make it in.
Yeah. It was like that one series, what was it, Prophecy, you know, that I love. Oh, like the 80s and 90s with Christopher Walken. Like, I love though, and I love that they personify Satan as this dude who was like, look, you know, it is what it is. You know, I was trying to do my own thing. It didn't work out. What?
Well, did you see the X-Files about the quadruplets?
Yeah.
Where they found them, they would always be in the street with
Right. And then their eyes would be burned out and that stuff.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. It was a trip.
And that's coming back. X-Files, it's coming back in January, so I'm excited. So, yeah.
So, y'all know how we do it on the Rant Room. So do me a quick favor. I got to start plugging this early. I'm starting to hear from some of our fans. We need to start reminding people about our Twitter. We need to start reminding them to like us on Facebook. We got to do it earlier because we tend to do it in the end. It's just, I don't know.
No, you tend to do it at the end.
Let's see what happened.
So let's get that straight.
I am a podcast head, and I almost get bored when I listen to podcasts, and they go for 5 minutes before they even start.
But your fans are telling you need to do that, so go ahead and do it right now.
I go, all right. So y'all know how to do it on the Rant Room. So do me a favor. Please go on iTunes. Yeah, go on iTunes.
Stitcher.
Subscribe to the show. Stitcher.
Facebook.
Please give us a 5-star review. We need that shit. That shit's important. Follow us on Twitter, ScreenwritersRR, and we'll get to all of our personal ones later on. Cool?
And share us with your friends, like
please.
Writer people.
Pass it around.
We are serious now. Let's stay focused.
Halloween.
We'll start dirty whining in here.
That was
sad
behind the music, too.
So if you guys are grown, let's go ahead and get it in. So as you said, As I said, we got my man Jeffrey Reddick here today. So we're coming up on Halloween, a couple weeks away. So I figured today we'd Lisa and I did a cool ass episode. Go check it out in the archives on the elements of horror. So we thought we'd piggyback on that again since we got my man, my big bro in here who knows everything about horror. You know everything, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Everything.
Everything.
We figured we'd piggyback off of that and talk about some horror elements again and a whole bunch more. So check it out. Let's talk about things that we love about horror. Like, why is it? Do we think we like horror? Let's go around the room. Talk about why it is. What's our first memory of why we liked horror? Let's go there first.
For me, I think because most of my friends were into like the Hollywood musicals. Mm-hmm. They were into like the adventure
Broadway
stories. Yeah, I mean, I like Pippi Longstocking and stuff too. But for me,
I love Pippi Longstocking.
Oh my gosh, she was my hero. I
am Pippi Longstocking.
I know.
You got it out of control.
You know, it's the idea of because my home life was kind of tense at times. Mm-hmm. It was a way for me to deal with certain monstrosities, things, and psychological things and happening. Yeah, in my family. But it was a way for me to watch it and process it through, in a safe space. To me, horror was always a safe space to watch things play out and always have like a hopeful ending. Even when things went to shit and everybody's dead, at least I learned some skills on how to survive and how to avoid things. I'm serious.
Okay.
Like, one of the things I learned from horror is to trust your gut innately. All right.
I would say horror does that.
Yeah, because
definitely.
You know, when I was at home, like, relatives and, my stepdad stuff, coming from a home where there was like domestic violence. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that horror teaches you is when things don't appear right, you need to listen to that little voice. Uh-huh. And as a little child, I took that in, like, okay, the adults are having a party, because you know how some grown folks get. They would barbecue, get together, they start to drinking, and one of your uncles or your stepdad shouldn't and stuff pops off. I always knew, okay, this is the part in the movie. This is like the first
act
break.
Three,
yeah, this is like the first act break where the monster appears.
Oh,
and this
okay.
is where most people
tease.
Die.
Uh-huh.
So this is where the final girl, which is me, needs to remove myself from the space and figure out how to way. So real talk, it was psychologically helping me deal with a lot of home stuff.
Well, that's interesting because, Jeffrey, we talk about, Lisa and I talk about a ton on different episodes throughout about why horror is so important as parents should raise their kids watching horror for this reason right here. You know, it helps you in situations of danger. It reminds you of something you've seen before.
Right.
You know what I mean? Go ahead.
When I think of, like, one of the important things I think of, like, especially, like, for example, last night we were watching, hey, shout out to Geek Soul Brother, we were doing Saturday Night Sci-Fi.
What's up, Geek?
And what we did was we were watching the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Okay.
We live tweet that. And so I tweeted, there's a scene where Miles and Becky are running because, they're supposed to, like, be still. Like, oh, people don't know where we are. And all of a sudden, the whole entire town is chasing them. And I tweeted, as a child, that's one of my most frightening memories of frightening scenes in movies. It's when, especially for children in horror movies, when children know that something is wrong and you can't get adults to believe you because they think you're a child
creepy.
And you don't know it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's when people realize something too late and when people who are supposed to be close to you, family, friends, the trusted people in your life, they turn against you and come after you. That shit fucked me up.
Mm-hmm.
So even last night as we're having fun and tweeting that, when those scenes came up, when the little boy Jimmy was like, that's not my dad! And I'm like, oh God, Jimmy, I understand your feelings.
Yeah, because we know something. The
And people always dismiss children anyway as if they're not their own being, because we think, oh, you're a child, you don't know anything. And a lot of times children, they're still entrusting their intuitiveness. And they know when shit is wrong. They know when parents are in a situation and they don't know how to articulate it to people. So those type of movies where I'm in a situation, I know something is fucked up, but I can't convince other people that it's wrong too. That's the shit that gets me messed up.
Well, I'm going to start with growing up watching Chiller, Thriller, and Creature Feature, and all that stuff.
Yes.
When it was kind of funny, the thing with two heads with Ray Milland, The Creeping Eye, Plan 9 from Outer Space, When Worlds Collide. So it was like kind of funny to me at first. So I was like, well, this is kind of funny and amusing, and these creatures are not, whatever. When it became real to me, because he used to have MOWs, right? Movies of the Week. The Sentinel.
Oh, my God.
The
People,
Sentinel.
Go see that shit.
The Sentinel.
Read the book, too.
Came on ABC. Sentinel, and then they did, what was the one with Gavin McLeod, and he was the reporter? Night Stalker.
Night Stalker.
And he went into the thing, and the demon had come to life, and was, and then it was just all that shit, and I was like, And then I was 13, and on TV, I'm dating myself, on TV came out. on TV, or maybe I was nine, on TV was the precursor to, like, okay? I was a baby, actually. On TV was a precursor to HBO and all that. And so my sister had gone away, and she left me there by myself. Mm-hmm. And The Exorcist came on.
Yes.
Oh, everybody in that damn Exorcist.
The Exorcist came on. And just to see the range of horror was very... it was a telling thing to me, because it was like, it didn't have to be campy, mm-hmm. or funny or crazy. Mm-hmm. It could have been suspenseful. It could tell a great story. It could tell one that just made you pee in your pants, because I had every light on in the house and the front door open.
you were doing horror movies wrong. Yeah.
These people drove up and they said, well, we saw the lights on, the door open. I'm like, yeah, I'm ready to run out. They're like, what are you running from?
Okay.
So just the fact that horror could embrace so much. It's just a veneer to tell different kinds of stories, mm-hmm. that were appealing to me as a child. So, mm-hmm.
isn't it funny how we all do it? We, even you at 10, whatever age you're claiming to be, 15,
fetus.
Isn't it interesting how we have the fear of while we're watching it? So instead of turning it off,
yes,
you go turn the lights on and open the door so you can keep watching.
So you keep watching. Yeah.
Isn't that funny?
Keep powering through.
Watching. Yes. Yeah. Like, okay, if the devil comes out, not like I'm saying he's going to come out.
Right.
But if he does, at least I'll be able to see him, because the shadow
That's
will, you know,
funny.
Not thinking as a child, like, well, maybe the devil doesn't have a shadow, or maybe he'll cut the lights off before
True.
He comes out.
Or maybe some pervert's going to walk in my house and kidnap me.
Yeah.
Okay. Didn't think of that either. I'm like, please come kidnap me after the Exorcist person comes.
I got the doors open.
And what about you, Jeffrey? What do you think?
You know what? Actually, I just had an epiphany. Mm-hmm. Because it's so funny, because growing up, when you know, I grew up in Kentucky, but I was born in Florida, so my early years were in Florida. Mm-hmm. And we were very, like, middle class there, and I was very much into collecting stamps and coins.
Yeah.
And I was in the Cub Scouts and the Boy Scouts and Little League.
Right.
And then we moved to Kentucky. And so I wasn't really into horror then. I was into Greek, you know, fantasy and stuff like that.
Yes.
And then we moved to Kentucky. And, you know, again, I'm so glad that I grew up there, and I love growing up there. I think it, you know, just built a lot of character and taught me a lot about people. But we did go to an area that was very, at the time, was very, very racist. Mm-hmm. My mom was white and my dad was African American. And, so that's actually when I started getting to horror films. It just hit me that before that, it just hit me right now. Like that's when I got into it.
Wow.
And so I think a lot of that was escapism, right. to kind of deal with all the stuff that was going on in my life. But another part of it that was kind of the fun part is there was me and three other friends. There was Calvin Somm, Tony Calhoun, and Jason Allen. And we would always hang out together and watch horror films. And the bloodier, the better. Mm-hmm. And Fangoria magazine.
Yes.
And then everybody at school was always like, you guys are weird. How can you watch that stuff?
Yeah.
And so it was almost like a badge of honor to watch it.
Right.
Did you grow up in the Bible Belt, or what was it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah,
yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. And I'm a Baha'i too, which is like an Eastern religion. Mm-hmm. So, you know, being, that was another, that was a whole other thing. growing up back there, going to the.
Kevin says he grew up in a cult.
stepping into like a Holy Roller church and you know, having them say that you're the devil.
Yeah.
That was fun. I remember that. Mm-hmm. That only happened one time though.
You're like, that was enough.
I'm over
for you.
I'm over.
You are the devil. Hey, sir, I will show myself out.
My mom just picked us up and like we just left. Thank you. But that was just because we were crying when they were talking in tongues. I don't think that was weird.
We need to put the fear.
but it's funny because it just hit me now that that's when I really started getting into horror was in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
But I do remember when I was in Florida, the first horror film that I saw, I snuck out and watched Sam's Lot. And that scene when Danny Glitch floated up to the window.
Oh my god, it gives me chills thinking about it now.
Let me in, Mark. Yeah, like that scene. So then I had to sleep in my mom and my sister shared a room, and so I had to sneak for like a week. I had to sneak and sleep beside my mom's bed because I was so scared.
Shut up! I was doing the same thing too.
But my sister knew, and so she would take shit to bed with her, like shoes and stuff, and she would just throw it off and hit me with stuff because she knew I couldn't say anything because my mom would know I was there in the room.
Yes.
So thank you, sis, if you're listening. Thank you for hitting me and you.
Just to jump on you real quick, it was funny you said that because even though, like you said, even though we know it's scary, how we keep pushing through to watch it, because I would watch these movies and then I knew if I said anything to my mom that I was scared, she would tell me, "Oh, you can't watch it anymore." So what I would do is literally I would watch like the movie of the week or those weird channels, and then if it really got to me, like Tales from the Dark Side, a couple of early episodes really, you know, and there was one Rod Serling show, I actually bought the DVD, I can't remember the name of it.
Night Gallery.
No, no, not Night Gallery. It was
Twilight Zone?
Movie. No, it was a movie of the, I have to give it to you, it was like an anthology of like three stories, and there was one about a hole where a kid's dog fell in there, and the father went down into
the
hole.
That's actually a true, those are true
stories.
Yeah, the
true stories. Yeah. And then they yanked in the rope, and they pulled him up, and his hair was white, and he was just like screaming and went insane. That fucked me up, where I had to go and like sleep by my mother's bed quietly so she wouldn't know I was there. And then I had to, at the crack of dawn, the light come up, I would have to sneak back to my room, because if she saw me laying there sleeping next to her, she would forbid me to watch those movies. So as soon as she said that, I'd have to like go sleep next to my, I remember like several times sneaking in, laying on the floor next to her bed, you know, when she would cough, like, oh God, I hope she's not going to get up and step on me because she's going to keep me. So that just brought back those memories.
Well, I grew up, we talked about this before, when you, your mom took you to the movies, but you were supposed to be in the back, sleep, watching the driving, because we didn't have drivers.
Right.
My mom embraced us to go. So we would load up, remember everybody had the little Z-vans and shit? We'd load up in a van and go watch a movie. And I never forget, Night of the Living Dead, the original one.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of reasons why that movie spoke to me so much. Number one, it's the first time I saw real nudity. Because you remember, there was this, there was one little shot of one zombie who's coming toward them at the grave when,
like, what,
when
like,
he's
what,
chasing
like,
his
what was
sister.
She doing to be butt
he's
naked
teasing
turn
his sister.
A zombie. Yeah.
And my man, they finally do the reversal on him, and his ass is showing. I remember seeing that for the first time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that made me go, I want to see that again.
Right.
And then that's what made me love the whole contained. I told you I love contained horror films. People get trapped somewhere, and how the fuck are they going to get out? That's way more scary to me. That's way more smarter to me, because it always ends up somebody survives in the end.
Right.
It's usually somebody you least expect to survive.
Right. And especially for that movie at that time, with Dwayne Jones playing Ben, you know, the black guy, you know, who's like the lead, and whereas the white character... No, he did Ganja and Hess.
Okay.
And he taught acting and a lot of stuff back east, and then he died pretty young, and brilliant actor. But it was like, it was one of those movies where it was really addressing the subtext race, because at the end sequence when they had like the moving still pictures, they were kind of juxtaposed and reminded you of the civil rights movement, the lynchings when they were putting the bodies to burn, the hooks. I mean, all of that was just subtextual.
They were just piling them
out and it was like the civil rights movement. It was just showing you what was going on, and it just made it even more real. And of course, as fucked up as it was, the fact that he dies at the end. So that kind of started the original. So every motherfucker who made a movie saw Night of the Living Dead and said, from now on, black people ain't going to survive in any movie. You might not be killed first. He did last. And this is the thing, because when I told you, when I went to the conference, there's a keynote speaker was talking about Night of the Living Dead and how there's a scene where, you know, where the sheriff and all of them, they're going around, it's the next day, and they're shooting the bodies. And then the sheriff go, oh, there's one right there, go ahead and shoot him. And it's Ben. And they shoot him. And the question was it done on purpose because he is a black man, or was it because they thought he was a zombie? Because
it was Ferguson.
Yeah, it was like, it was Ferguson.
But in all, you know,
it done purposely, or was it because they thought
times.
He was?
He looks like a zombie in the shop.
No, he doesn't.
He looks like a zombie. Does he not?
I think he looks like a zombie.
He comes out kind of like tired.
He's all tired.
The sun is hitting his eyes, so he's just like, he looks like something's wrong.
Yeah.
So it looks, you can give me that funky ass look if you want to.
I cry racism, because at least if you 50 feet away, the least a motherfucker can do is like, hey, is you a zombie or not?
Like Ving Rhames did in Dawn of the Dead, the new one.
Right.
He said, say something.
Right.
And she said, like, help me or some shit. She said something funny.
Right.
You know who else was affected by that movie? Lana and Andy Wachowski.
Why?
Because they said that their father took them to see that, and they were mesmerized by this black man trying to save these people who didn't want to be saved.
Interesting.
And they were just like, wow, you know, that just really, really made a big impression on them.
That's interesting. Here's
the other thing about that movie. It's the first time that I remember. I'm sure there have been plenty of other horror movies before. What was that,
1968. The year someone was born.
Jeffrey.
I was born a year later.
I won't name no names.
I was born a year later, Grandpa.
That's the first time, and I've went back to that movie many times when I had to write another script, because it has all those elements of character. You have the scary girl, the nervous one. You have the asshole. Archetypes. You have the you know what I mean, the sexy girl on the side, and then the younger couple. It really has all. You have the big tough black guy,
and you've got the subversive moments too, where you have the little girl eating her parents.
Yeah,
you have the little girl who turns
cannibalized. And the monsters who really are just regular people. And because, you know, up until that time, until 1968, you got to remember we were coming out of a lot of heavy World War II, a lot of atomic bomb stuff. So we had a lot of big monster movies, you know, radiation, like one of my favorites, them. You've got like the King Kong movies. And so those were like big, oh, yeah, that's a monster. That's a creature from the Black Lagoon. That's But here, in this case, the monsters were us. You know, and that's it kind of fucked a lot of people up, you know, especially when you got a girl in the basement and she's eating, you know, and it's like cute little Carol Ann looking little girl, you know, oh, cute.
Oh,
and then she down there grounding on mom and dad, just eating away. And I remember when I saw that and I said, see, that's not right. And I love it, you know. So, I mean, there's a lot of it really did spawn a lot of movies where it start bringing horror to the domestic.
Sure.
You know, because, you know, a few there was like, when was The Extras? Wasn't that 1973?
72. Is it that old?
Yeah, it is. 73 or 74.
I always think it's like late 70s or mid 70s.
Oh, maybe
it's
75.
It was the book.
Yeah, it was the book first, okay. William Blatty's book, and then it became the movie.
Based on the boy.
Yeah. But it was like after that, then we started seeing more and more of those domestic horrors, you know. Halloween, you know, with the babysitter, where, you know, that kind of thing, where in the beginning, once again, you have a child doing something subversive, where he's stabbing his sister to death, you know, that kind of thing. So I think, you know, those movies are just wonderful, and I loved them.
Let's talk about some elements that we didn't talk about. Let's talk about fear and how we use them in scripts. Let's start with you. Like, things that you do in your scripts adding more fear. How do you know when you're adding fear in your scripts? Like, what type of think tricks or things do you do, if you think about it?
I mean, what I try to do is I always try to make it start with the characters and then the concept of it. You know, you try to come up with kind of a cool concept, and then...
Well, you're really good at coming up with concepts, okay?
Yeah, my old Gwen Potter, who was a hip pocket agency me at CAA many, many years ago, told me that I was a concept... queen. she meant that in the best possible way.
Yes.
That's a good thing.
Yes.
No, because I worked at New Line, so I started working at a studio at 19, and so they kind of taught you, or you learned early on that it was the concept is what hooks everybody.
Sure.
So you need to have that concept that's going to make your movie make your movie stand out from other movies. So I'd always kind of start off with a concept. But when I'm actually writing scary scenes, I try to think of things that I haven't seen before, or put twists on things that I have seen before.
Okay.
Like, one of my favorite scenes that I wrote was in this movie Tamara that came out through Lionsgate, and it's my homage to Carrie about this girl who's picked on and gets killed, and she's in witchcraft, and she comes back, and she knows kind of all the sins of her tormentors, and
she knows all the sins of the tournament.
And she kind of turns it against them, and they end up kind of killing themselves.
She uses it against them.
And there's a scene where the guy who videotaped, or works in the audio video center and provided the video equipment, there's a scene where she possesses him, basically, and it's time to, you know, we realize he tried to kill himself before, and so Tamara's like, you know, your problem is you never finish what you start. And so he goes on to, like, the video feed. Spoiler. But, so he goes on the live video feed, and you think he's going to confess what him and his friends did over the weekend to Tamara, but he just starts talking about how he is a loser because you can't stand by and watch horrible things happen to people and not do anything.
Right.
And he's like, you know, he pulls out an X-Acto knife and he's like, you know, I'm never going to stand by and hear no evil. And he cuts his ear off. And so then you know where this is going.
Right.
And he
goes,
and speak no evil.
Right.
And then see no evil. And then he stabs himself.
Right.
So, you know, like, you know, when he pulls that knife out and the way he says hear no evil, you know exactly.
Right.
You know how this whole thing's going to come out.
Right.
So it's setting up that oh shit, he's gonna cut off his tongue next. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we know where this is going. So a lot of it's trying to set, a lot of that is setting up expectations, and sometimes it's setting up expectations and subverting them. But,
right.
But a lot of times it's trying to like put something out there in the audience's mind, and then having them just sitting there like, you know, clutching the seat, like waiting for it to pay off, mm-hmm. like what you're setting up. So mm-hmm.
okay, that's interesting. What do you think about fear, Kev?
I think that, to piggyback on what Jeff was saying, it starts with the character, and what does the character fear? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be anything grandiose. It could be something like spiders, mm-hmm. or the fact that I'm going to go slowly insane, mm-hmm. Which is, was it Cake? Was that the movie that just came out? And mm-hmm. what's her name was having Alzheimer's?
Oh, Jennifer Aniston.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. those small things, and I try to build on that. So, or if you... Or watching something that's gross and fearful, like, you know, having you, who hasn't had their nail bent back accidentally, mm-hmm. or, you know, things like that, those mm-hmm. small things that build into bigger things. And then by the time, you know, the big whatever comes along, you've already, people are already jumpy, mm-hmm. because you've had all these small things, these small incidents happening. So I try to go with what the character would fear. Yeah. What would take him over the edge versus me? You know, because when you're watching somebody else's, you really can't, like you said, when you're talking to people, I'm like, well, quit being melodramatic or blah, blah, blah. But that's what makes that character scared. And you're like, can't you just understand that the person is scared, mm-hmm. or whatever? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, those small things that make the character just frightened.
Mm-hmm. Right. For me, it's the whole ocular thing. It's what the gaze, what the character is seeing. I like it when I try to create characters where... because, you know, most of the time when you have the protagonist, we are kind of living the movie through that protagonist. They are our eyes to the world. But I like setting up things where the character sees something before everyone else does, mm-hmm. and kind of putting the audience in that, you know, the knowledgeable brainiac position where it's like, oh, fuck, how are they going to figure this out? I kind of like to help have my audience, when writing a script, like have them start to think, well, what the fuck are they going to do? And mm-hmm. have my character do what the audience thinks they would normally do, the normal thing to do, mm-hmm. and then create things where the normal thing that you would do, the smart thing, gets subverted, where it's like, oh, that didn't work. You know, mm-hmm. the normal thing would be to leave. Okay, this looks kind of fucked up. Let's have our character leave. Like, yeah, they did the smart thing, but then that smart thing actually was the wrong thing to do, okay. to kind of like do the twist and mm-hmm. change it up a little bit. Okay. Because a lot of times when people go see horror movies... The thing that kills horror movies for me is when people do stupid things, because then I stop caring for you.
Yeah,
like, I definitely have to have characters set up where you care about them and you care what happens. The thing that bugs me about really bad horror movies is when I don't care about your characters. Mm-hmm. When the movie is just about how cool, like in the Saw movies. The first mm-hmm. one was cool. Second and third one, not so much. Mm-hmm. And the fourth one, the fifth one, not so much. Because mm-hmm. after a while, I didn't care. Because the whole point in the movie, or those Eli Roth movies, mm-hmm. where it's not really about the characters. It's about how cool... Yeah. We can kill people. Mm-hmm. After a while, that gets boring. So I definitely want to create characters where we care about them. We want to make sure nothing happens to them. And also have them do things that the normal thing that they would do, like the audience who thinks they're smarter, like, don't be stupid. Mm-hmm. But they do the things that a smart person would do, and they still get fucked up. That, to me, makes it scarier, and it makes it feel like, shit, what are mm-hmm. they going to do? And that just ratchets it up, that tension, you know?
And you know, the funny thing is, like, that's what I've always told myself I want to do as far as I want to write a movie where the character does everything right. But, you know, the thing with that, that's why there are certain tropes in horror films. Like, oh, mm-hmm. our cell phone doesn't work. You know, it's because then you really have to come up with, like, this almost unstoppable kind of killer.
Yeah,
like,
you have to set up why they get trapped.
That's kind of a challenge. Like, before I die, I want to write the movie where, honestly, like, the character... Like, they kind of did that with The Conjuring, where it's like they got out of the house, and then the ghost... But the ghost was attached to the kid.
Yeah.
You know, so that was a cool way to, like, right. get them out of the house and still have the thing follow them. But I want to do a whole movie where it's like... The minute there's a killer, this person knows it, they start doing everything right. Like, they call the cops, and the cops get, you know, like, mm-hmm. it takes the cops, like, 8 hours to get, like, in the visit where,
right.
you know, the kids are trapped out in this house, and it mm-hmm. takes the, you know, cops 8 hours to get to the house. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, or yeah, mm-hmm. we're stuck in the middle of nowhere. Nobody mm-hmm. will ever get here before I kill 20
right.
people.
Right.
But then, you know, to set up the characters that are that smart and have access to all the technology they have, mm-hmm. and then have a killer still be able to get them.
Right.
It's difficult,
but it's something, you know.
It's a challenge.
It's a challenge. Mm-hmm. It's a challenge.
Yeah. I'm working on that. It's called Cliché. Mm. And it's, it's a, it is a horror film just like that. Like, because I was like, oh, I'm so, I just scream at the screen when people are like, why are you doing that? Yeah. I was watching Sorority Row. Mm-hmm. And he had killed all the girls, and, went, and there was like these bubbles outside.
Yeah.
Bubbles
on that girl
and the girl goes,
the
I'm going to go outside. And the girl's like, okay, be careful.
Yeah.
And at that moment, that's where I'm like, you deserve to
Why?
Die.
Yeah, you deserve to
In
die.
In fact,
Why
I'm going to go jump in the movie and kill you myself, basically. Yeah, I just don't like it when they make movies dumb that way. Mm-hmm. And I don't.
Yeah.
It just takes me out of your movie. It just takes me out of your movie totally. Mm-hmm. Cuz then I'm like I'm excited and then they do stupid and then it's like I don't care, like I'm really like wanting to get my money back because I want to be scared. It's very hard to scare me. Mm-hmm. You know, and like we know it's because you know all of us we've seen so many horror movies. So, you know, takes a lot to like scare this bitch right here. Like you got to do some work.
You brought up a really good movie, The Conjuring. Which we all liked last year.
Mm-hmm.
Last year or 2 years ago?
Two years ago. 2013. The second one came out.
If y'all ain't seen the bitches, that's your fault.
They had a second one?
Well, yeah, they did the too. Doll, the Annabelle.
Or Annabelle.
Oh, Annabelle. I was going to say.
No, there's a Conjuring.
They're doing
another Conjuring.
Okay. No, I'm thinking Insidious. Insidious.
No, that, yes, Conjuring, and then they did Annabelle, which was a riff off of that. But they are doing a Conjuring too.
They're doing
Conjuring too.
Conjuring's the one with the doll, right?
Annabelle's the one with the dog. Well, yeah, Conjuring had the doll in the beginning.
That's what I'm talking about. Right. Let me tell you this. Right. Let me tell you. We're talking about fear. We all have seen all the movies with dolls since freaking Twilight Zone.
Yes.
Which is your thing, right?
Yes. Oh, my God.
Way back in the 60s.
Talking Tina.
Talking Tina, that bitch.
That bitch. Okay.
Look, here's something that Conjuring did that still. Now, we all seen the trailer. So we knew what was coming. They also did the...
Oh, my God. We talked about this before. Yes.
Yes. But let's talk about that teaser that they did at the beginning.
Oh, my God.
It is one of the best teasers ever to me.
Yes. Because
two college bitches living by themselves.
Right.
She got a doll. Sits the doll down.
Shout out to all the college bitches out there.
It's perfect fear. The doll's in another place. I didn't put the doll there.
But they did the smart thing is they threw that doll away. Yeah. And we thought that's the end of it. Because, you know, it's like, well, fuck, you know, let's just throw it away, whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, they should have burned it, personally, I would have thought. Yeah. But then when that
Holy
bitch knocked...
Yes!
got rid of it. And then when that door...
Oh, my God.
My stomach dropped when the knock on the door.
Knock, boom, knock, boom.
And I was like, if this bitch opens the door...
And she went like this... And then the pig camera panned down.
Yes.
Seen the real, because you know that's a real story, right?
Yeah.
Have you seen the real doll?
Mm.
It's a Raggedy Ann.
It's a Raggedy Ann. Yeah. I saw they had the container. It's in the container.
They have it in the case, and they would come home, and she would have written on the ceiling. They're like, where's this bitch getting parchment from?
Parchment. Not scratch paper.
Written on parchment.
Writing in cursive.
They were like, what is going on?
Show Amazon.com. I need parchment paper.
Did the bitch go out to the paper store and buy some parchment?
And no one noticed?
Nobody noticed. Can I help you, ma'am? I'm just looking for some parchment.
But it was like the self-contained, perfect, like, ghost story thing. Mm-hmm. And it set the tone for that movie because it was like, this is what these people are working with.
Mm-hmm.
God forbid what the next entity is going to be. And that was a brilliant movie, and I thought it was really well executed. And the key, once again, people, if you're writing horror... I fucking cared about those people.
That's right.
Yeah. I didn't want anything to happen to the mom, the kids, the dad. Mm-hmm. I felt it brought me back to the old days of Amityville Horror, where it's like, but you know, they work so hard to get that house. They can't live in the house.
What do they do? You talked about this in our previous episode. Mm-hmm. Go listen to that episode, bitches.
Mm-hmm.
They made them like normal people that we don't, you know what I mean? They weren't like a bunch of movie stars.
Right.
They were like,
they were regular folk.
Like $1-2 million. It was like really cheap.
Even though the lead actress, what's her name?
Lily.
What is Lily's last name?
What are you talking about? Amityville?
Conjuring.
Conjuring. Oh, Rose Byrne. No, wait a minute.
You know, we got some other people. Anyway, so the lead who played the mom in that, who's a brilliant actress, but she's also a brilliant character actor.
But
who's done
I'm
a lot
just
of
saying
independent
we gotta
films.
Think about who it is.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. And that's brilliant because she's been in everything and she's a fantastic actress. But the fact is, they were like regular people. They looked like they was from the 70s.
They did.
And we cared. It was like, it wasn't like, oh, it's. You know, Jennifer Aniston trying to pretend like she's just this normal person living out and blah, blah, blah.
I do have to say, though, I met Jennifer Aniston once and she's a sweetheart.
I'm sure she is.
I know, but I just want to say.
No, Jennifer.
I was lost on the Sony. No, I know you're not talking about
Sony. Yeah.
I was lost on the Sony lot and I was looking around and then this lady comes up to me and she's like, oh, you look lost. Where are you going? And I told her to go and she's like, oh, just walk with me. And then all of a sudden it was like,
that's Jennifer Aniston. It's the walk of a Rachel.
She's walking me to my meeting.
What's her name?
Lily Taylor
and Vera Farmiga.
Oh my God. Those bitches are beautiful and they're great. Yeah. But hey, Jennifer Aniston.
No, I just had it.
No, it's because she's fantastic. Because she's beautiful and she's popular and she's well known, and I can never see her in a horror movie.
I believe that. Yeah. From her character that you see her in all her movies, she looks like she's cool.
Just a lovely person.
You know what I mean? But anyway,
back to horror movies. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the dark.
You didn't ask about fear.
The dark.
I was talking about fear. Why those things make me.
Oh, for you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. like I was using that as an example.
Oh, right.
Scream's a great opening, too.
Yeah.
That's your favorite.
Well, Nightmare on Elm Street is my favorite movie. Tina's death in Nightmare on Elm Street is probably my favorite death of any horror film. It's just brilliant.
Mm.
And then, but the opening of Scream, I just watched. Like, for some reason, even the last time we were talking, I feel like a nerd.
Mm-hmm.
Well, even our last podcast, I'm like, yeah, I've been watching that opening over and over again.
Right.
I just love that opening. With
And even though it's Drew Barrymore, we hadn't seen her in a long time. So it's kind of like, yeah, it's this
you
girl.
Think she's going to be the lead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And her performance
the
is
the old
so
Hitchcock
good.
Way of doing it.
Like your boyfriend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
and she responds like, we know what I thought. Who was this playing on the phone?
Love
who
about
was this?
That? Because it seems like, is this a joke? And you see, because it was kind of like, light and whatever. And then she looks out there, and he's in the chair, taped up with, then somebody comes by and just stabs him. You're like,
yeah. Right.
I mean, really?
Right.
Is that how this is going to go?
And isn't like, because it's been a while since the screen. Doesn't she run outside like her parents drive up? And
it's really sad. It's like, it was really, because he really milked that, because it's like the parents are coming.
Right.
And she sees him, so she starts to run towards him, and the killer like grabs her and stabs her. And so as they're going in the house, she's like trying to.
Aww.
It's really.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm
crying.
I don't cry.
Because it brings you all the things, because she's doing everything you're supposed to do. And right when you think, oh God, the parents are there, she's almost going to make it, it's like ripped away. And what it does, it sets up for the rest of that movie. Like anything can happen.
Mm-hmm.
You can do the smartest things you can do, even try to get out the house and run away, and it's still going to go bad for you.
But
and
then
so
as it went on, I'm like, now I'm the brother of the mother who killed them. I'm like, okay, you know what? Is this too many of
y'all
you all?
Too much. Yeah, you're doing
a little bit
much.
Too much right here.
Yeah.
The first one and the second one, I might give. That's what I think they start, God forbid, that executives start meddling when they start saying, oh, I think this should happen right now. And you're like,
well, let's talk about that.
I created that. Why don't you let me?
Well, let's talk about that. We have Jeffrey here in the room who's been in development.
Great. You want to talk about that?
You've been in development 200 times. Let's talk about what's it like to be in development on a horror film. I've been in development once on a horror film. You've been in development.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about it on a studio level, though. What's that?
You know what? It's really interesting because every experience has been different. Like with New Line, it was very interesting because I worked at the studio.
Mm-hmm.
I knew the producers.
So it was like just going to work.
It was a weird thing because the funny thing is because since I had grown up in the studio system, I thought I could just write the project, and I wrote my draft, and then they went out and they brought James Wong and Glenn Morgan on,
mm-hmm.
and they did a great job rewriting it, even though they tried to take all the credit for it.
Glenn Morgan, James Wong, we're talking to you.
Someday I'll make it. Mm-hmm. I'm sure I'll make some kind of amends. I think I'm bitter.
Hey, I'll ride up.
But I stayed in New York, so I didn't really go out and play the game. Yeah.
Right.
But it was a pretty the toughest sell for that project was getting the studio to buy a movie where death was the killer. Like they just had a hard time. They're like, well, you can't fight it, and
damn it, who are these executives? Because if you would have brought that to me, and I'm sitting there like, Negro, let me write you a check.
But that's
right now.
But see, everybody says that, but. Studios are so like risk averse, and New Line was actually took risks. Like they were very.
That's why I love them. A lot of my favorite movies came from that.
Yeah,
that
no, they're
company.
A great studio. So, but they just
and Dimension.
Dimension. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we threatened to take it to Dimension, and that's when they finally bought it. But it was a great process because I worked with two producers, Warren Zeid and Craig Perry. And Craig Perry has been kind of the shepherd of the whole franchise. I love him. One of the greatest guys in the business. So we really worked the treatment out so much that by the time they bought the treatment,
mm-hmm.
I wrote the script and they went right out to directors. So that was a pretty easy process. Mm-hmm. For the sequel, I had to, they went out to, every writer in town.
Right.
And I had written my pitch for the sequel and they ended up finally buying it after meeting everybody else. And it's
just funny.
Yeah, dumbasses.
No, it's not.
Like, go out to everybody.
It's funny because, it was an interesting thing because I think looking back kind of with just in retrospect, I think that there was this kind of feeling since I'd been at the studio for so long that I was an employee that they did a favor for, or you know, I think that's what they thought. They were like, and I kind of stayed in New York. I didn't go out to LA and start really working the business. Okay. I just stayed in the state, you know, stayed in my little bubble. So I think they, you know, all my friends were in New York were so proud, you know, of the movie and happy for me. But I think kind of on an executive level, they looked at it like, oh, we did a favor for this, you know, our employee.
Yeah.
And so then they went, so of course they're going to go out and meet everybody else. And how about they ended up buying my story for the sequel anyway.
Okay.
With Day of the Dead, it was an interesting situation because we were with a studio, New Image, that puts out a lot of stuff, and they're kind of known for putting, you know, for being very like hands on, like with you. And they kind of let me and Steve Miner go off for a while and do our thing, so to a certain point, and then they started kind of coming in and changing things,
like, and we get change it. This.
So, and then with Tamara, we pretty much had no studio interference. That movie just kind of changed from the script to screen because of like budget going down then actors getting nervous up doing certain scenes and you know things and a couple million dollars disappearing somewhere. This had nothing to do with Lionsgate or the director or City Lights or anything like that. But there was a chunk of money that for the budget that never made it to the movie. And again, had nothing to do with City Lights or Lionsgate or the director or any of those people. So every process has been kind of different. I'm from a theater background, so for me, if I get notes on, I've always been very collaborative. If I give, you know, when I shot my short, like, you know, I was open to input from the actors. You know, I sat down with my first AD and went through a shot list. I talked to my DP. You know, I talked, you know, like,
talk
I'm
to everybody
I'm, because
yeah.
for me.
Tell everybody, remind people good. About your short so they can.
Oh,
look
it's called
at
Good
that.
Samaritan. You can go watch it. After you listen to this,
go and see it.
You can watch it for free, or you can pay some money.
Yeah, we have it for free, but if you donate $1, we have like a behind the scenes feature that we put together. But it's
oh, that's cool.
It's on a website called Tent Square, T-E-N-T Square like a box .com, and it's a cool short. It's about the a guy who videotapes somebody being assaulted and doesn't help, and a whole bunch of other people witness the assault as well, and they've started dying off, and so he's being grilled by. A pundit on TV, but played by Rainn Wilson, and the guy who shot it is this actor, this wonderful actor, Toby Hemingway, who was in The Covenant and Black Swan. He was one of the sexy warlocks.
Of course,
in the
you got his shirt off the entire time. I noticed that. I was like, why am I wearing shirt? Got to be off the entire movie.
Here's the funny part because we had this discussion because obviously you want somebody to feel vulnerable, and I had seen Toby's work in other films, and he's a slim guy when you see him on film. So I'd seen his work, so I reached out to his. I reached out, and you know, my casting director Cameron Ayala got a hold of his manager and got him the short, and he really loved it. And so I met him, you know, and I'd seen his work, and I knew he could bring the all the layers and all the fear. But I'd written him originally because he was agoraphobic, to be really pale and frail. And I met Toby. He's like, and you meet him, and he still looks skinny. You know, he's like, well, I got some tattoos. I'm like, well, that's okay. Like, you know, that's okay because you know, if you're agoraphobic, I mean, people that I know that get tattoos are trying to express something. Okay.
Right.
There's no reason why an agoraphobic wouldn't have tattoos. And I know people that stay in the house all the time and they work out all the time. So if it doesn't matter if you're – because he kind of showed me made a muscle. I'm like, okay. But then he comes to set and he takes his shirt off and he's freaking ripped. And I – you know, we picked up some Jama bottoms for him and they kept him like really low.
Right.
And I'm like, dude, can you pull them up a little bit? Just because all my friends are going to be saying that I made you pull
it was in my head. I was like, look at Jeffrey
exploiting that poor.
Hashtag man flesh.
Exploiting that poor ripped actor.
And
Toby, Toby in his British accent, he's an amazing guy. Like, I love him to death. He's like, I work out hard for this body. And he goes, I'm going to show it off. I'm like, fine.
Okay, all right.
They give you full frontal. They give a fuck.
But the shirtless part was because or the whole time, even if it had been like a
it was fucking with a guy sleep
or
and stuff.
Out of shape guy, it wouldn't have mattered. It was vulnerability of just somebody in their pajama bottoms, like a girl in her bra and panties, you know, just to make it more vulnerable.
Yeah. But there's definitely something to having your shirt off. Especially
being
on the
naked,
set in front
naked
of
to the
people,
world.
You feel a little awkward.
Right.
You know? Unless, except if you look like Toby and then you're just walking around going, yes. No, he was really nice. But
look at me,
I'm making fun of him. But,
do you have another question? I wanted to bring up something. Okay, so here's the thing. There was an article came out recently. What was it? in thedissolve.com, and it was talking about horror scariest trend is a non-existent black filmmaker, but it was saying in terms of black filmmakers doing horror. Mm-hmm. And they had interviewed Ernest Dickerson. Of course, if you don't know who Ernest Dickerson is,
Ernest,
you need to go shoot yourself.
Demon Knight.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Ernest talked about in the article, he had mentioned a situation where the 2001 movie, what was it called? It is called Ghost of Mars. Was John Carpenter's, and they said they did a screening of it, and of course, if you don't know the story, basically Ice Cube plays like this prisoner who breaks out, and he has to battle these literal ghosts that are on Mars, you know, so it's sci-fi horror, that kind of thing. And so I guess they had like a, you know how they have like the little tester screeners?
Screening, right.
And so Ernest Dickerson said, somebody said in the audience, he says, it was Screen Gems, so a friend of Dickerson's approached the film studio Screen Gems about turning an outer space set graphic novel, which was Ghost of Mars, populated by black characters in a movie. The studio executives responded by saying they'd recently test screened Ghost of Mars. After the movie ended, a Q&A session was held, and one of the questions was, and I quote, well, how'd they get that nigga to Mars? Okay? When the studio heard that, they automatically said, see, science fiction, and I'm and within the norms of science fiction, I'm going to put horror too, part of it too, doesn't work for black people. Wow. Okay? And it went on to say that black people don't see themselves in the future, and of course, most people don't think we even survive or make it through horror movies. Wow. Like, how do we counter stuff like that? Because one of the things that's interesting
really
about horror, there's been, I have a whole list of movies, I guess I can put up on our Facebook page, about like the 20 top, quote-unquote, black horror movies. Most of them are horrible. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to be honest with you. Get your feelings hurt.
Bad.
Those of you who love Death by Temptation, I'm sorry. Those of you who thought Tales from the Hood was like the shit,
that shit was,
God bless you, but hashtag nope for me.
The sweet blood of Jesus.
And the child, look, can we not go there?
I'm not. I just threw out a...
Which was, you know, a remake of Ganja and Hess, which is one of the better ones, which is experimental horror kind of thing. And Spike Lee remade it with the Kickstarter to Sweet Blood. It's on Netflix. Mm-hmm. I still look at it in my queue. I haven't heard great things about it, but I'm like, I'm going to watch it because, you know what? You made the effort. Let me just try to be... But there's this thing where if we do... Why is it so hard for us? Because when one thing, we have Jeffrey who's writing like these big high concept things, but most of the characters, they're not all black. It's pretty much, you know, one of the mainstream audiences. But how is it that, because I know black people who love horror, hashtag bitches we sitting in the room right now, you know, like how, you know, when people say that, how, why aren't we making, why is it so difficult for us to make horror movies that, one, don't turn out like slapstick, comedy-ish, Snoop Dogg, you know?
We do have a philosophy,
But talk about, do your personal experience.
Do have a philosophy.
Who's we?
Black folks.
Okay, I just want to clarify so people know what we're talking about.
I'm speaking to you, bitches.
Hi, fam.
We do have a philosophy because we have so many different superstitions. Mm-hmm. One of them being, it's like, how do you think it is that it became known... We can ask this question. How did we think it became known that black people started talking during movies? I think it came when horror movies came on. Because we'd be like, bitch, don't go in the door. Mm-hmm. Oh, hell no. She is not going to go in the fucking woods.
Well, I think it's I think it's the call and response thing.
It is, but it came from the church, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then it translated there.
And probably also the problem of stupid horror movies. I would probably say the same thing,
There's a lot of bad ones. Uh-huh. But so,
and for
us
a reality
to
TV
buy
show.
Into... Having one of us be in a movie like that, it takes a lot.
I'm going to respectfully disagree. I think
because
we watch
because
his movies.
Because of our superstitions.
But that's what makes it fun for us to go see it.
What did that person say in there? How did he get up there? It's like...
That's a white person saying that,
like
though.
It's like when I watch a movie and black dudes go diving into water, I'm like, what brother is just going to dive into the ocean like that? Where they got brothers
My dad,
except
scuba
for,
dives, I surf.
For,
thank you, Kevin, having your hand raised over there.
I'm looking at... Cause
just
because
you
city.
Ain't seen it doesn't
I'm
mean it
city,
doesn't exist.
I'm a city brother. So in the city...
See, it's you city Negroes who are messing it up for the rest of us.
Well, actually, I can tell you the problem.
All right,
ahead,
come on, Jack.
Go ahead.
Tell us.
Yeah, bring it on.
Go ahead, Kentucky.
Yes,
tell us.
Come on, Tucker.
I can tell you from a studio point of view,
all right,
what happens is that... Because originally, we approached Maya for the lead of Tamara. This was after Chicago, and everybody loved her. And this foreign sales company said, we cannot sell this movie internationally if she's the lead, because black movies don't travel.
Because white people make up this thing when we know it's a lie, because we lie. You take our music, our fashion, you can take our movies. It's we got these gatekeepers. But go ahead, Jeffrey, continue.
So they, you know, and we ended up with getting Jenna Dewan, who I love, and I think she did a fucking phenomenal job in the movie, and I love her to death. So I couldn't have actually asked for a better one. But I'm just saying that. Same thing with Final Destination. I wrote that. I said, hey, this is set in New York. Mm-hmm. I wrote an African-American, you know, couple of characters in here because New York is very diverse. It's the most diverse city in the world. Let's make sure that we make the cast diverse. They cast it in Canada. All the kids ended up being white. And I'm like,
once again, white people.
I'm like, hey.
Making up shit. I'm calling y'all out. Not my sweet, wonderful white friends that are beautiful, but those hateful ones who live in a bubble. You know who I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Continue, Jeffrey.
But the thing is, they don't think about it because it's not in their
What?
Their purview.
And their bubbleheads.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And but what we see is now we do see a lot more. Like one of the projects that I'm working on now, I'm actually working with Lionsgate on. Mm-hmm. Called Superstition, and it's with this company called Global Renaissance, and we're actually purposely making it a very international kind of
case. I hope so, when you call yourself global.
I know. So you know, we're not just focused on African-American characters.
Right.
We want to focus on everybody.
I love that.
We're, you know, and mm-hmm. that's kind of the, you know, and I think the Fast and the Furious, you know, that movie kind of did a really great job of doing that. I think that
everybody was black dudes except for... Paul Walker. Yeah, he was the only white dude in the whole, and that movie made money.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. And Ving is high yellow. That's it.
Because people are Hollywood doesn't give. I think a lot of times doesn't give people the credit. They don't. They think that people won't go see it if it's a black lead or whatever. And people don't care if it's a good movie.
No, they don't.
You know, and
why is it working in television?
Jeffrey's so nice about it. He's like, this is how it is.
But he's a former studio.
I've just heard him, you know, behind, you know, that's like I've sat in casting sessions before where, you know, a woman will come in and she'll leave, and then one of the producers, and we had a female casting director on this particular project, and one of the producers is like, I wouldn't fuck her, and puts her in the, you know. Yeah. I mean, that's just like the business that, you know, it's, and, you know, that's just... sexism.
Well, we're just going to change that because that from now on, that's not going to slide. Like, that sexism, that racist bullshit. Because guess what? We are hurting you in your pocket. We ain't going to see your movies.
Well, let me just give my I mean, it's not a big example, but so I shot my short. So I wrote a neo-blaxploitation sci-fi thriller called A Killer Surprise. Mm-hmm. And everybody in the movie is people of color. And it was kind of experimental and strange, you know.
Yeah, he's got like animation stuff going. It's cute. Yeah.
Martial arts.
So people were just like, what the fuck is this shit?
He's like the black QT, Quentin Tarantino, you know.
Shit? What is this? This gets a 10 on my WTF meter. Or I went to, what's the thing? What's the?
Ain't It Cool News?
No, what's the counterpart to IndieWire?
Shadow and Act?
Shadow and Act. Went to Shadow and Act. They dissed me hard.
Really?
Yes. This girl sent me some questions, mm-hmm. and I was like, okay, well, they're always talking about, you know, sci-fi and horror and people of color doing stuff. Great. She sent me a list of questions and, like, abbreviated them all. Really? She didn't even put them all in there.
Really?
Yeah. And I was like, but then they went on to some really horrible Nigerian, like, I don't know, Spider-Man fighting the wall or something in Africa. And they were just going on and on and on. I'm like, this is why we can't get it together. Because even though you don't get it, but guess who did give me props?
Who?
IO9, mm-hmm. Ain't It Cool News,
right. Mm-hmm.
Geeks with Passports,
yep.
Greek Tyrant, mm-hmm. all those people. And they were like, well, now be kind because we like these.
And a part of that is because, I'm going to say it, some of our black filmmakers, they don't have film history behind them. They don't know anything about films. They haven't seen anything. I'm not saying all of y'all, because I know the ones that are doing it, you're doing it. But for the most part, most of us, we're not watching international films.
Right.
We're not watching things that are experimental and creative. Like, for example, shout out to Black Radical Imagination, the homies out there who are going around taking experimental black films and taking them to different cities to show black people that we are creative, experimental, that you can do all kinds of wonderful things with film. Mm-hmm. And the problem is we don't get credit for being creative in that way because the Hollywood studios always seem to see us in the same kind of boring just boring way. And it's
and
like,
we do too.
I mean, we do too.
We're like, well, what is this? This is some weird shit.
And it's not. Like, it's like, no, if you knew film, no, bitch, you would know that this is something different, and you could be able to like see an homage to something else different if you knew film, if you studied film, if you, bitch, if you watch some films outside of the far, you know, the main ones that you watch all the time, which are mainstream movies. Mm. You know, if you don't have any type of like, I know. If, I mean, I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm just frustrated.
I know.
These Negroes are frustrating me.
The thing that gives me a little hope is I'm working on a project. The thing that gives me a little hope is me.
Well, yeah, thank you. Shout out to Jeffrey.
I'm joking because that's what it sounds
no,
like.
No, don't joke. No. That's but like, think about no, because no, like we said earlier, we got, you're one of the two black people who've made successful
validation.
But I'm working on a feature version of Good Samaritan with the producer Andrew Vandenhouten, and we took a list of people that we wanted for the film, and our, you know, top choice is an African-American actress. I don't want to say her name in case we don't get her.
But you don't want to jinx it.
But NBC Universal actually approved her.
Really?
I was like, I want her. I want to put her on the list. Mm-hmm. I know they're probably going to say that
I want to know the names of those people who said yes so I can give them a shout out. So whoever they are, thank you for being open to different casting.
That, you know, that really, I was like really grateful because she's the lead actress. There's no, you know.
Do you think it's because right now black women are hot on TV?
Yeah.
Like Scandal. Sleepy Hollow.
I mean, Empire, and 20 million viewers. I mean, I think TV's helped. And TV's always kind of been, because it's cheaper and results are quicker, TV's always kind of been a trailblazer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why so many filmmakers have moved to television now. And now they're like, oh, surprise, we can't, you know, we can see, you know,
White people can't go see a movie where there are some color folk in it and they're not the center of the universe.
Or they'll watch a movie where most of you.
Let me tell you something. Yeah. This is something you need to be involved in. You need to be coming to the Committee of Black Writers at the Writers Guild. Tip this. So this week, Wednesday night, we had our meeting. We have a meeting every 2 months. In the last 2 years, have been kind of a small little coup that's happened. Lena Waithe
A bloodless coup?
You know, ooh. Michelle L'Amour and all these people have kind of taken over.
A ghetto
coup. Now we
coup.
Have a new the new leader in the committees, right?
Uh-huh.
So since then, we went from like 5 or 6 people at the meeting to like 60, 70 people at the meeting.
Oh, nice.
So what I noticed, we took a picture. It's on my Facebook page.
I saw that.
And it's like 65, 70 of us in this fucking photo.
And I don't believe that.
He put it on Twitter.
Yeah. And so what we always do is we go around the room. Hey, my name is Jeffrey Reddick. I'm currently writing a movie called Superstition, blah, blah, blah. Hey, my name is blah, blah, blah. I'm a writer on Empire. I mean, every other writer out of the 60 people in the fucking room was a writer currently on some hit show that you heard. I'm a writer on Blackish. I'm a writer on Sleepy Hollow. I'm a writer. I mean, everybody. And so the good thing about it and the bad thing about it is most of the people is coming from, they're all young. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm one of the older people in the fucking room. Ain't that a bitch?
And you still a baby.
I'm used to being one of the younger people in the room.
I know. I used to be hanging on Palm Springs.
I'm going to have to go retire. And one of the cool things is, here's the good thing is, it's now we're getting more members in the Writers Guild. The more members we have, the more powerful our union is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other thing that's happening is, say you come out of Disney, I staff you on a show.
Mm.
9 times out of 10, they never move up.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
You're the first person to go. I mean, it used to be that you get on a show, you move up to story editor, executive story editor, you know, and so on and so on. Now, they're like, oh, your contract is going to be up at the end of the season. You know, we're giving you 20 weeks. We're giving you, you know, we'll finish the whole 6 months. But after that, you're gone. It's like, how do you ever move up?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of that is also the new business model that we're in now, because I noticed that with the film studios, they use the last writer's strike as an excuse, first of all, to blame the writers for everything that they do, fucked up. But they also used it to as an excuse to like cut a lot of their deals with people and starting giving writers even crappier deals. Sure. They use that as an excuse to get away with a lot of the bad behavior that they were doing anyway. And so I think that it's just they don't want to. You know, it used to be like a cleaner system where, you could work your way up.
Right.
But it's cheaper just to hire somebody to work for 2 seasons and then fire them.
And get them out.
It is.
Yeah.
And, you know, but if you have really powerhouse like creators like Shonda Rhimes, I'm sure, you know, you know, she's the queen.
She's the queen.
You know,
and she moves everybody up.
And,
you know?
And you know, and shows, and the thing that I like about shows like something like Sleepy Hollow. Like, mm-hmm. I
Yay,
love that show.
Sleepy Hollow.
It's fun. The actors have great chemistry. And right. the thing is, it's mostly an African-American cast.
Mm-hmm.
That's it's never brought up.
Right.
I don't even know if it was on purpose. I think maybe they just cast the best people.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a mostly African-American cast. Mm-hmm. And there's an Asian-American character on mm-hmm. there. And there's
a Latino.
Ichabod, and a Latino. Yeah, it's mostly, you know, it's the most one of the most diverse shows on mm-hmm. the air. Mm-hmm. And it's just never been an issue.
Right.
And it's never been brought up. And the show is so well written. And mm-hmm. there's never – I'm sure there's been some complaints. Every time there's like – interracial couples on shows.
Well, it's like when I work, and not only just Sleepy Hollow, you talk about The Flash, mm-hmm. you know, where you have like Arrow, mm-hmm. those characters when you have, and where race is not an issue, like they're just doing their job, they're doing their thing, and that's this right. is how it is, and that's the way it should be.
That's the way life is.
That's the way life is.
That's what's so
yeah.
frustrating. It's frustrating and it's interesting because like, that's why like, I try to write characters, and a lot of times they don't, like in Tamra, the lead character was originally the heroine was coming out as lesbian.
Mm-hmm.
And her biggest fear was that her parents would find out and disown her, so it kind of right. paid off with her parents trying to kill her at the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. So it was really intense.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, we can't afford parents because the budget is such a- let's lose the whole subplot.
Really?
And so then all of a sudden it's like, you
what's
know,
her
she,
flaw then?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
She didn't, you know, then she's great, but it's just like there was this right. really powerful like subtext that got cut mm-hmm. out. But I had integrated her in such a way where, you know, they could just take out the fact that she was a lesbian. It didn't affect sure. the plot.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in the Superstition movie, there's a gay African-American character.
Mm-hmm.
We're really casting diverse, so we're right. I'm not sure if he's going to – he might.
Right.
Yeah, as long as he's some sort of diverse,
but,
that's great, you know?
But, you know, again, it's very reflective of our modern times. He's mm-hmm. he's gay, you know. Mm-hmm. His best friend knows he's gay and is like, you know – As some of my straight friends do, he's like flirts with them, you know, jokingly, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. you know, they have like a little bromance going on,
right?
But nobody, it's never, nobody makes a deal out
right.
of it. And that's how society is, in a way. It's like it seems to me that other people make a big deal. Like when I talk about being gay, like people, like you know, will make a big deal about it, or they'll mm-hmm. quit rubbing it in my face, or quit making a big deal about it. I'm like, I'm not. I'm just mentioning you're making a big deal about it,
right? You know? Right?
Like,
yeah.
Like
yeah.
when you talk about your girlfriend or mm-hmm. your wife,
right?
Or, you know. Or you think that girl's hot, like, mm. you're not rubbing anything in my face. You're just telling me
right.
a fact,
right.
you know, and
right.
and I don't make a big deal about that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so it's just, it's always interesting what people consider is a big deal. You know,
right.
like, and for me, when I'm writing characters that are diverse, I try to make them, like, just as complex and as real as right. everybody else. And you know, their race or their gender or their sexual orientation is a facet of who they are,
mm-hmm.
But doesn't define them. That's why I love pretty much all of Shonda Rhimes' shows right now. Mm-hmm. She's got, like, you know...
They never even talk about it.
Yeah, but no, they just do it. I can't... I showed one of my friends some of the clips from How to Get with Murder, mm-hmm. some of the sex scenes. And he's like, this is on network TV? Yeah. I was like, yes.
They go right they to go, the line and they fade out.
I think another issue that is prominent is there is no cohesiveness amongst those of us who are in this niche.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean that you have to throw your life on the line, but like, okay, I heard about this, or what are you doing? What are you working on? Let's say not that this is what happened.
Yeah, like, Kevin, that's a good idea. My manager would love that.
Exactly.
Like,
we don't do that.
Yeah, right. That's true.
We do not do that. And this is a niche, like fantasy. Like, I see these cats drawing and whatever, you know, over here at the little coffee shop. And one guy's like, oh, you know, I'm going to, you're talking to this guy, you know, I'm going to help you and get your boarding right and blah, blah, blah. You just don't see that from, you know, oh, you're writing a horror flick? Oh, let's see how we can make that work. Mm, or
Who do I know?
We just don't do it. And I'm not saying if it's shitty, now your stuff has to be on point.
Yeah,
it has to be on point.
Right.
And if your stuff is on point, then cool. But we just don't. I mean, we're fearful.
There are two things that are coming up that I'm kind of looking forward to that I'm really curious to see what happens. Number one, those of you who are familiar with Jordan Peele from Key and Peele's TV show, he's currently like his love is horror.
Is there
and right
yeah,
now he's writing and he's going
to
be directing
My favorite
a horror
thing to do
movie.
Was that zombie thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Did y'all see that? Did you see that?
Well, right now
we got to keep it.
Go ahead.
So they did a zombie one where Because you know how, like, if what happens if the zombies came and the black people were just ignored?
So it's like that whole thing is set up funny. Like, it feels like The Walking Dead, and they're going through, and all of a sudden they realize that the zombies are like,
you the know,
and, like,
are scared
and,
them
and there's zombies in the car, and they come by in the car, and the family of zombies, and like, they lock the door. And Jordan Peele's like, ain't this a bitch? And then you come to find that the punchline at the end is all the black people having a barbecue. They're like, hey, come on, they're not even fucking with us. Come on over. And then they come in, and there's a zombie climbing over the fence. It's like, oh my God, they're having a party. It's hilarious. But that show had a lot of horror elements that had humor in it. Okay. But right now, he is actually writing and getting ready to direct a horror movie, and it's going to be dealing with race.
Really?
He's going to be, I think,
Is it horror?
It's straight horror.
No comedy?
And basically, the idea, I guess, is like his character, from what the last thing I read, unless he's changed it, was it's like it's a black guy who's dating a white girl, and they're going to go meet the parents. They're coming to dinner to meet the parents, and then some shit pops off. And I was thrilled to see that because, number one, you know, a black person making a horror movie, you know, something different. And a horror movie that's dealing with something that can be kind of complex, which is race, that otherness, that kind of that secret monstrosity that no one wants to talk about. The second thing that's coming out I'm looking forward to is there's a movie called XX. And it looked like it's going to be coming out. I mean, IMDb and look up XX. It looked like it's going to be coming out in 2016. But basically, it's a horror anthology, but it's all female directed.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Okay. So we'll see what happens. I can't. One of the things that I love is I love horror anthology movies. Mm-hmm. There's not that many made, and there's not that many that are made well. Mm-hmm. Like some of the classic ones I can remember.
Trilogy of Terror.
Yeah, the Trilogy of Terror. Mm-hmm. Like, I love those because it's a quick way to get a bunch of horror stories in there. I would think,
they're
honestly,
usually British when they're anthology.
Yeah. But I'm looking forward to see if they can do some. I did look on IMDb, however, and I was looking at the cast. They had like one black female cast. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't know how, you know, diverse it's going to be, but I'm excited for those new things that are coming in horror. Of course, we talked about the movies that have come out that have gotten big pub that I've enjoyed. For example, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, The Babadook. Don't you shake your head over there. And also, even though some of my friends, either you liked it or you hated it, and most of you guys hated it, which was...
Don't say the bitch shit.
It Follows.
Oh.
Which the third act completely fell apart. But it got me. Come on now. I was there for it. I was rooting for it. And it had elements that I love about horror, that I cared about the characters. It got
me
a couple
times.
That's
how I felt about Zombieland. I loved the act one.
Yeah.
And then it just went.
And yeah. So, you know, so there's some things that are coming up. And I know that there's young
filmmakers. Tales of Halloween's a good anthology.
This which one?
Tales of Halloween.
Oh.
I just opened on, I think it just came out. It's in theaters right now, and it's on video on demand.
It's on video demand.
It's like 11
Oh wow!
Horror directors.
And there's didn't if you guys see The Boy? It came out in theaters briefly. It is on video on demand. I have to check it out. Which is basically a white boy who I guess him and his father, they run a he's only like 6 or 7, and the dad runs like a motel, and little boy is like a little serial killer. But it's called The Boy. Cool. So yeah. So if you haven't checked that out, check it out, because I want to check it out and just see. I love horror, and I love when kids are evil.
Interesting.
Well, let's wrap this up, but let's just go around everybody, just give a little bit of something to those writers out there who are writing. Give them one little
nugget
to help them with their horror scripts or even sci-fi scripts.
I'll give you a basic one. Yeah. Go watch classic horror. Go watch some international horror. Mm-hmm. Okay. And take notes. Like, find the top 10 international horror films that did well box office-wise. Find some classic ones and really think about and write like a little paragraph, like, why did this work? Why was this popular? What was going at a time that movie was happening? Because really good horror, if you're really good, you're really going to be extrapolating things that are happening currently, whether it's politics, what's happened, the culture wars, whatever's happening, and you put that in the film, and it's those little tiny things that people pick up on. You know, like, I guarantee you, if you watch any classic horror movie, look to see what was happening during that time period when it came out, and you're going to see some things bubbling up that you can put into your work. A lot of racial stuff that's going on right now, a lot of school shootings, gun culture in America. Those are some things that people are really scared about right now, and those are some things you might want to think about factoring in when you're writing your horror.
Well, Lisa, you and Jeffrey love to talk about the fear of the unusual. You know what I mean? I noticed you do that a lot in your writing. It's always about some psychological type of thing.
And that kind of came from, you know, reading a lot of Stephen King, you know, getting into people's heads.
And
Clive Barker, who
took
the kind of bizarre but made it realistic.
Yes.
Right now. So funny, I wanted to marry him when I was younger.
Oh, I did too.
I was too. I was underage, and it would have not.
No, you know what? When I saw the cover of his book, and I said, he looks like one of the Beatles. He looks like Paul McCartney in his younger days. And then when he started working out, building out, and then I met him a couple. And I'm like, I would marry you if you were not gay. I would marry you right now.
I always had a crush on Sam Raimi.
Aww, that's so
especially
cute.
Especially now, he's like a little older, much more
that's
mature.
That's so cute.
We all don't go, yeah, us too. We're like,
aww.
Oh, no, Mr. Raimi, you're adorable.
Okay, what about you? Some advice.
Do not restrict yourself. Go as far out as you can because it is easier to bring you in than it is to push you out. So once again, learn some of the rules of just basic rules of writing, but then go beyond those boundaries and write to your heart's content. It's, you know, if the person is in a house and I don't know, a bat flies in, maybe he can eat the bat and the bat gives, I don't know, anything. Just don't restrict yourself. Always look for something that's bizarre and unique in your story.
Jumping off that, I think that realize that whatever life experiences you have give you a unique filter and worldview. And, you know, I never took any writing classes. I just read a lot of scripts and watched a lot of movies. And I stuck with, you know, I stayed with horror and sci-fi. I read a lot of sci-fi, too. I just haven't written any yet. You know, I really immersed myself in that world, but also because of my experiences and what movies influenced me and what writers influence me, that kind of helped shape my voice. And so it's like, find your voice, like find what speaks to you and like what issues matter to you, because that's what I love about horror is you can actually deal with all these other issues.
Racial
issues or homophobia or just domestic violence,
exactly,
or bullying or just even people just feeling different, you know. You can deal with these social issues in a context that if you did it in a drama, it might sound preachy.
Right. But in horror.
In horror, you can hit it at a completely different angle.
Right.
That's a good one. I would say tap into your dreams. Like a lot of people, especially writers, a lot of us, we keep your notepad by your bed or your, you know, you speak into your phone like in the middle of your night.
That's me.
Because your dreams tell you little secrets or little, I have the most elaborate visual, and it's always zombie or vampire dream, but that's just what I have. And I'm always chasing, but I'm always like Blade in my dreams. And I get weaker and weaker as my dream goes on.
Wow.
And they finally catch me by the leg and I wake up somehow every fucking time. Wow. Anyway. But I would say listen to your dreams. And the other thing I'd add to that is, and I know Lisa and you and I, and I in particular, and I haven't spoken to you or you about what you guys do. Music plays a very important element to me. So I'll make a whole little song list, a playlist that I'm writing to. So if I'm writing something that's in the horror element, I'll keep it in a dark tone. So I'll be listening to Susie and the Banshees. And
so he'd be working on his subconscious.
It keeps me in the tone. It helps me to have that tone. So that whenever I sit there and go, okay, I'm at a loss, a new song comes on, and sometimes the words they say, you know, will just spark a whole
new
thought.
When I'm writing a horror thing, I got two Blue Bells playing.
Oh, yeah.
From The Exorcist. And I'm like, you know what? As soon as that comes on, my subconscious goes, all right, we about to go dip into the dark side. Let's drop
now. But see how it keeps you in that space?
Yes.
And you need to be in that space. Go
ahead. That's so funny. I listen, because I have my horror soundtrack, but then I realize when I'm actually writing, I listen to, like, just everything. Like, I have this whole mix of different songs, because it's more noise to me.
Right.
Yeah, I feel
it. But sometimes I do, like, you know, nothing like a good John Carpenter.
The best one is the best song to play, and you got to play this in the dark. We'll fuck you up every time.
Can you talk a little louder?
It's I'm trying to get my scary voice on. No. It's it's Ozzy Osbourne.
Oh, which one?
And it's damn it, what is that song? It sounds.
I know what you're talking about. It's like an anthem. It's
what is that?
I know what you're talking about.
Not Hell's Bells.
No. It's on my iPod. Anyway, it's one of those ones. It's like it raises. I'll put that on and sit in the dark.
It's like an opera. It's fucking beautiful.
It raises the hairs on the back of my neck. And what was Ozzy Osbourne's group?
Black Sabbath.
Look up Black Sabbath. I can't remember which song. I'll put it up on the Facebook page for us. You sit in the dark and you put that song on. I'm telling you, if you don't write the most fucked up shit, you must be Satan yourself, you know? But it's one of those things that it just totally gets in my subconscious. Like, all right, I'm about to go to some dark places.
There's a lot of those. groups from the 70s that had music like that that would freak AC/DC. You the fuck out.
Oh, when Tangerine Dream had those weird, when it's kind of like real kind of weird, kind of creepy things. I like, yes, I love that. Those old 70s scary kind of things, but yeah. Anywho.
So anyway, so that's what we wanted to do for y'all today, just a little something.
Get you ready for Halloween.
Get you ready. Get you ready. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. All Hallows Eve. You got to remember now, beware of the witching hour. You know,
Devil
because...
Cried, the, Lady Evil, Heaven and Hell.
Oh, he's trying to give us a song?
It wasn't The Devil Cried?
I don't think it was.
Electric Funeral.
No.
I know it when I hear it. That's
Under
sure.
the Sun, Every Day Comes and Goes.
I'll have to look on my iPod see what it is.
Look it up.
Yeah.
This ain't scary. I was going to say, my dreams always turn into Storm from the X-Men.
Do you really? What are you fighting?
Whatever I'm fighting. I'm going to storm and start shooting lightning and hurling tornadoes.
You know what my thing is when I have scary movies? I try to make friends with the monsters.
Really?
Like, I've been doing it. I've been doing that since I was 5 years old. Like, if there's a monster at the door, like, literally, I'll start talking, like, so what is your pain? Can we just work this out? Like, literally, I'll negotiate.
See, you're the bitch I want to have.
I negotiate.
I'm watching in a movie.
I negotiate.
Like,
no, I try to negotiate or make friends, or then I try to fly away and I can never get away fast enough. Yeah.
It's like having one of them dogs and the foam's coming out the mouth, and somebody's like, give me a break.
You want a biscuit?
He was just nipping. Abused doggy. He gets love. God. He'll be fine.
Cujo.
Yeah. Cujo will be fine.
So where you at, Lisa Cote?
You can find me on Twitter. You can also find me on Twitter. You can find me lurking in the shadows of Saturday Night Sci-Fi or Friday Night Horror. Sometimes I'm on the 80s live tweet with Black Girl Nerds. But you can also find me on BitchFlix, where I write a lot of film reviews with an intersectional feminist slant. And you can always find me on here. Or you can find me at...
We can't ever find her on Facebook on our page, though. I don't know why.
And it's so sad. You know what? I swear to God. It's because I'm busy.
You have a job?
I'm back at work. I'm back at work now.
You weren't at work for 3 months, and you still...
I'm back. I was traveling.
I love putting her on the spot. Where you at, Kev?
I am at killer_brew. I'm trying to get it right.
Can we get him to go on... Twitter. Like
I was
day.
On Twitter the other day.
Once a day.
I'm at killer_brew on Twitter. Also, I want to give a shout out to Sheer Jillians on Twitter. Thank you for liking my voice. nice. And also, I have a Kickstarter campaign up and running.
Promote it, bitch.
Go to thebarriers.com and it'll take you to the Kickstarter.
Spell it.
If THE, B as in boy, EARIORS.com.
How do you say that? The Barry what?
The Barriers.
Barriers.
So this, if you liked bombastic action adventure cartoon shows of the 80s, like Thundercats and, you know, the 90s Gargoyles and all kind of stuff, this is that kind of show.
Kung Fu Panda's cousin.
No, not Kung Fu Panda. Thundercat, Transformers, G.I. Joe. It's that kind of show. So go to thebarriers.com, look me up, and donate to Kickstarter.
Cool.
Oh, cool. And I'm at Jeffrey A. Reddick on Twitter and Instagram, and then that's the best way to get a hold of me.
No, you're very supportive, though. You be promoting shit on.
Oh no, I do. I promote my shit, but I also promote all my friends.
Yes,
no, I do. I definitely I love supporting my friends. Like that's one great thing about the horror community. Mm-hmm. Just my friends in general. I'm always I always love to support them. So.
You know what we need to do though? These times we need to have something where like seriously think about this, Jeff. Like. You know, have you teach a horror, like a basic horror screenwriting class, like a one day or half day thing.
I've done it a couple times. So.
And, just a basic writing and talk about those things, especially with the wonderful work you did with, you know, Final Destination. I think.
And you know what?
Get that out there.
You could use that as an example.
Show clips from the movie.
Even if it's just your script.
Do that. So I just want to put that out there for you to think about doing that, because I really think that one of the ways that we can nurture and create more venues for people, just all people who like horror in general want to write it, but in particular to people of color, when people are telling us, people don't do that, yes, we do. And we just need to know that there are people.
Yeah, I think it's
who are successful at it, and it can help show us how to do it right.
Well, it's funny, you know, I know we're here at the tail end, but one of the things I want to tell you, Jeffrey, I don't know if I told you last time, one of the things I like about you is every time I've seen you since way back in our coffee days when I used to see you at the coffee shop, you've always been the same person. Same really nice, cool demeanor. I see why you work a lot. I see why.
He's so sweet and assuming.
Everybody has
and
nothing.
And comes up with the craziest, yeah, evil, messed up
That's
shit.
That's why. You know? Oh, I'll just write that down.
Well, I'm like Norman Bates. You're like Norman
Bates. You're nasty to me, Becky. I'm just going to write that down. Yeah.
You didn't make my coffee like I like it. You're dead. You're dead.
You'd be sitting there with a little checklist.
Okay.
Yeah. That's one of the things my mom was, and also growing up in Eastern Kentucky, one of the great things was, like, they were always like, don't get above your raisin. Mm-hmm. Like, never forget where you come from. Mm-hmm. So that, Matt, you know, for me, it was, you know, my, you know, racial identity, but it was also my economic, place too. So I'm always I try a lot to reach out to people, no matter what background they are, in impoverished areas, you know, whether it's in small towns or in, sure, the cities, mm-hmm, because I think poverty and racism go hand in hand, mm-hmm, but I think poverty
more insidious.
It's more insidious, and it feeds it on both sides.
Right.
It feeds racism on both sides, mm-hmm, because, you know, where I grew up, there, you know, most of the people are white that are, mm-hmm, that live below the poverty line.
Right.
And, you know, and a lot of these kids are like, oh, we never thought anybody from here could amount to anything. And they still, mm-hmm, say that to this day.
Wow.
And I'm like, I'm just a writer. I'm like, you can be a doctor or a, right, teacher. Like, there's so, right, much that you can do, but there's such hopelessness. And this is in America.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
come on, East Kentucky. We can do it. We can do it.
This is what pisses me off. Is like, you know, we argue over, you know, we don't want to give tax breaks to corporations and this and that. And it's like, we have kids in this country
starving.
That are starving.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And it's not their fault. And, yep, you know, mm-hmm, when we, like, let's start taking care of our own backyard.
Yeah.
You know, in the city, or whether it's out in the countryside. Right. Like, let's, you know, when it's especially when it's kids, it, right, just infuriates me.
Sure. Right.
That we don't, you know, we spend hundreds of millions of dollars on these, you know, elections and things where we just kind of don't get change because people, right, are, you know, have lobbyists and all this shit. Mm-hmm. When we really, honestly, like, I can go back to my hometown. It's not just in Eastern Kentucky. It's like, you know, I can go to any state, right, you know, in this place. And the United States, and you'll find cities where people are just living in squalor,
sure, mm-hmm,
with no access to health care and no, mm-hmm, food, and it's disgusting that we live in a country where,
and we shoot ourselves in the foot.
We're in Hollywood, one,
because
of the
you don't know, yeah,
world,
and you don't know where that person. You don't know,
yeah,
that person could be the, yeah, person who solved a lot of the problems for everybody.
Sure.
Like, you know, we kind of squander, you know, our people are our natural
brain
resource,
trust.
Right?
Our brain trust, mm-hmm, and we squander it for the same few people. And, you know, we could really be having some brilliant... We could be the country we pretend to be.
That's the thing.
Or
like,
we tell people we're going to be.
And I love this country, and that's what I tell my friends. It's like, the ideals that our country were founded on, mm-hmm, are such great ideals.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to live up to that. Mm-hmm. And we're not doing it as a nation.
Like, America's like our drunk uncle who can't get his shit together. You love him, and you want him to do well. It's like, dude, you're the most brilliant, you know, mm-hmm, or your auntie who just can't get his shit together, her shit together. It's,
yeah,
like, you are just the shiny thing, and we just can't see it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. What's up.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
So, there you go. Y'all know how we do it on The Rant Room. I'm your host, Hilliard Guest, and you guys can follow me on Twitter. You guys can follow the show, Screenwriters RR. And please give us a 5-star review. What's the other word? Subscribe to us on Twitter. No. Shut up, bitches.
iTunes.
On iTunes.
Oh, we subscribe to Twitter now.
Stitcher.
iTunes, Stitcher,
what's
Spreaker,
the other one? Lesbian,
whatever all that other stuff. What?
What's the other?
Did you say lesbian?
He said, what's the other one? Lesbian?
Libsyn.
Libsyn. Oh,
Libsyn,
okay,
is the thing that we use that distributes it.
Oh, I don't
it
know. I just, you know.
Well, then I'll be saying
lesbians
it.
Lesbians are,
okay,
a group of women.
Who love other women.
Yeah, exactly. We'll have some on the show. And thank you, guys. We appreciate everything you guys do for us. All the top countries out there. And I hope you guys have a great holiday weekend for Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
By the time this comes on, I'll be a married man. Oh, my,
yeah,
God.
Yeah.
I'll still be single. Find me on Twitter.
I know
Twitter.
A whole bunch of people who want to get in y'all's drama. They're like, tell Jeffrey to call me. 555.
Y'all are doing the most. They're doing the most in here.
Oh, my God.
So y'all say it with me. Y'all know how we're doing on The Rant Room. We keep it street.
Mm-hmm.
We keep it opinionated.
What?
We keep it what? 2015. Peace, y'all.
Get out.
So know you wanna be a rider. Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminished and the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed. In the rent room, we let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want. Welcome to the Red Room.